That's my music. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. I have as my guest David Steinberg. He hasn't been on for 2 years, which is way too long. My error, because David Steinberg is brilliant. And he's been writing about sex and gender since 1989. He had a monthly column, Comes Naturally. It appeared in Spectator magazine from 1992 through 2004. And since 1999, he's photographed, well, this, David, it was over 160 couples in 2015. It's probably way more than that by now. Welcome to the program, David Steinberg.
Thank you, Diana. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about how you photograph couples who are having sex and some of the layers of meaning that might not be obvious to most people. But I was started to say, as of 2015, you'd photographed over 160 couples. How many is it now, would you guess?
Well, it's a little bit more than that. In the last couple of years, it's probably close to 200 couples now.
Yes, yes. And so I just wanted to read, you have many wonderful blurbs, what people are saying about your book, This Thing We Call Sex, which is just such a great book. So this is Joni Blank, and Joni's passed on now, and I'm sorry about that. But she was the founder of Good Vibrations.
Right.
And she says, and this resonates for me too, David's core message is important for everyone, that sex is a treasure to be celebrated and a path to self-knowledge. I certainly agree with that. In the 35 years I've been working as a sex board-certified sex therapist, I would say that that's very true. It's pretty core to who we are, and it helps us learn about ourselves. And I also wanted to quote Michael Castleman, who wrote your foreword as well, and Michael has been on this program. Wherever Steinberg ventures, his explorations take us closer to the heart of this thing we call sex. In Steinberg's view, sex is who we are, how we live, how we experience desire, yearning, joy, and life. And that's so true. And it's also one reason why about 33 years ago, I decided to specialize. I was a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I decided to specialize in human sexuality as a therapist because it's fascinating. And it is pretty much does describe who we are.
Well,
at
yeah,
our core.
I certainly agree with all of that.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about one part of your book, This Thing We Call Sex, and that's part three, Real Sex in Front of a Camera. And I witnessed you photographing a couple here in Seattle. And as you say in your book, reactions go beyond, oh, look, sex is happening, and we get to watch. So
yeah.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about that, David.
Well, I started photographing couples in 1999. The question to me was, you know, if we are critical of pornography for not really showing what people really like when they're having sex, we began to think, how can we produce imagery of people being sexual that really is genuine emotionally about what sex is all about? And, you know, as you can imagine, that's sort of a tricky project because there's the couple and then there's the photographer. So to start with, you have a situation where people need to be willing to be sexual with a third person present, with a person who's taking photographs of them. And then the question is, you know, is there any way to do that without even when you get beyond finding people who consider that an interesting thing to do, how do you go about setting up a situation where people can be real in front of the camera rather than feeling self-conscious or artificial, or that they're putting on a show or something like that? That's what I was interested in anyway. I mean, every photographer works differently, but my interest was about the intimacy that's involved in sexuality. So you're asking people to be their most private, intimate selves in basically a public context, photography. So the way I design the situation is all about what will make people feel most natural, most comfortable, most relaxed, least self-conscious while I'm photographing them. So I photograph people at home because I think that people are more comfortable at home than in a studio or a hotel room or someplace like that. I make a point of meeting with the people that I photograph ahead of time so that they can meet me and understand who I am, that I'm not some creepy guy just looking mm-hmm. to ogle them, where we can talk about what it would be like to do a photo shoot, and they can understand that this will be a fun experience. And once we've met, when we get together to actually do the photography, usually not the same day or anything like that, I make a point of not I don't pose people. I don't tell them what to do. I just ask them to be who they are and leave it up to me to work around them. So I'll move my lights. I'll move my perspective, trying as much as I can not to interrupt their energy in the process of taking photos. And I think there are a number of photographers doing what I have come to call fine art sexual photography. I think what I do that's unique in this area is not posing people, about being focused entirely on letting the people be themselves and finding ways to work around them rather than having them trying to generate photos or even worry about me. So that's what I do. And I think that the photographs that I get, there are many photographers actually who I believe are technically probably much more skilled than I am. But what I think that I get that's valuable is a spontaneity and a genuinity of emotional feeling that comes from people just being comfortable and being left alone to be who they are. Often at the end of a shoot, I'm amazed when people talk to me and they say, oh, we completely forgot that you were there, which, considering that I'm moving lights around and changing film in my camera and doing all kinds of stuff like that, is actually pretty amazing.
And a compliment to you and your integrity.
This is a form of portrait photography, and to get a really special portrait of somebody, whether it's, you know, sitting in a chair or being sexual, whether it's a photograph or a painting, the person who is being portraited needs to trust the artist that they're working with, trust the artist to be genuinely interested in showing who they are and in capturing who they are, and not having an agenda that that is at odds with who they are. So that's, you know, and I think that people get that about me pretty quickly, that I'm not playing games, that what I want to do is show who you are when you're being sexual. I don't have a particular picture I want to have happen. I don't have an agenda except to capture the energy of the people that I'm with.
And the emotional energy. And that's in great contrast to pornography. Let's back up a little bit, because you've already described how your photography is entirely different from porn, but one of the things that inspired you to start this because you'd been a writer for many years, but you felt that people wanted some sexual imagery, but it didn't seem before you started, it didn't seem to be available only in porn. Although you might also, in answering this, how it's different, you might also describe your book, which I bought way back, and then another copy later, Erotic by Nature. But talk about how porn seemed to be the only sexual imagery available.
Well, the first book that I did, this was back in 1988, before I started doing my own photography or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's called Erotic by Nature, and it was a collection of erotic photography and fiction. From the premise, a group of us worked on it originally, and then it ended up kind of being my own personal project. But what we believed, and what I still believe today, is that people consume, tremendous amounts of pornography. I don't think that it's because people necessarily want exactly the kind of imagery, if we're talking about pictures, that pornography shows. I mean, if in one sense pornography is fantasy material, it's material to masturbate to. So the kind of imagery that you might get you hot while you're masturbating is not necessarily the same imagery that you would be interested in if you were looking for portrayals of real sexuality.
Yeah.
So my premise with Erotic by Nature was that I think that separate from porn, people want a different kind of erotic and sexual imagery. It's just that they don't have anywhere to go to get it. And, the book ended up being very successful, and we sold, about 15 or 20,000 copies of an expensive art book with no budget, no advertising, no promotional system really in place, which I think showed that there were people who were interested in that. Separate from that is imagery about yourself as a sexual person. And the thing that I got interested in when I started doing the couples photography, two things. One is I was just really interested in the project that I tried to describe a few minutes ago of what is this situation like where people are being sexual and a third person, me, is there, camera in hand, trying to make something artistic out of that. How does that work? What is the energy field of those three people in a room together? So one of the things that I offered to people who were interested in that is the experience of seeing just what that experience is like. And the other part of it, and this is what I tell all the couples who express an interest in being photographed, is I say this is the only way you will ever get to see what you look like when you're in the middle of your sexual experience.
Yeah.
It's not the same as looking in the mirror while you're having sex. It's not the same as setting up a little video camera in the corner trying to photograph yourself having sex. You need a photographer. I mean, I'm a fan of still photography rather than video. And the thing about still photography is you take a moment and you freeze it, as they say,
mm-hmm.
so that you have a chance to look at a moment for more than a moment, which is, is really difficult. It has any one given moment has so much embedded in it that you can take 5 minutes looking at one instant captured on film in a way that you can never do on video. And I tell the couples that I work with, I said, this is the only way you will see what you look like, because you need a photographer who sees the moment when the power of what's going on between you is visual, and snaps the shutter at that moment. And then when you get to look at it yourselves later, you will see what you look like. And that is over and over again when I show the couples the pictures that came from the shoot, which is at a later time, because I shoot film. I don't shoot digitally.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I think our listeners would be interested in that too. That you still shoot film.
And, yeah, I like film. I think that it offers, there are all sorts of manipulations that are possible with digital imagery, although you can also do that with film by doing digital scans. But I like the film because it has more flexibility in the end. But the result is that the couples that I shoot at the end of our session, which in some cases lasts an hour or two, and in some cases lasts all day, it's totally up to the people I'm photographing how far they want to go with this. But when we get together later to review the photos, almost invariably, they're looking through the photos, and people are, genuinely delighted to see what showed up on film. But there'll be a moment where somebody says, "Oh my God, is that what I look like?" And then their partner, always, this is literally 90% of the time, the partner says, "Well, yeah, because, assuming we're talking about a heterosexual couple, he knows what she looks like, and she knows what he looks like, but neither one of them knows what they look like."
That's right. So people are getting
to see themselves, in these very powerful moments for the first time. It's as if nobody had, if you took a camera into a culture that did not have photography and suddenly exposed them to photography for the first time. People are getting to see something that they have had no way to witness about themselves before. And I think that that's, just a tremendously powerful experience.
Very powerful. You write in your book, "One woman confronting deep issues of how she felt about her body called the experience of the photo session one of the most important days of her life." Can you expand on that?
That's maybe the strongest example, but so many people have said that to some degree to me, one way or another. This is a woman who, she was now 50 years old. I think her husband was a little bit younger than her. Mm-hmm. She had had polio as a kid.
Oh.
And, had dealt with all the consequences of that, which in her case involved walking on crutches and so on.
Yes.
But as happens to many people when they have polio, in midlife, a lot of people have polio go through what they call post-polio, which is, at some point their bodies start to deteriorate further. And what had happened for her was that was going on. And after much refusing to give in, she finally had to admit that she needed a wheelchair and, build a ramp up to her house and adapt her whole sense of herself as this person who was now more disabled than she had been before. And, that was a really difficult process for her.
Yeah.
So for her, she was a highly sexual woman. It was kind of an interesting story because she was very excited about doing this photo shoot, whereas her husband was actually kind of reluctant and shy about it. And it was only after we sat down and talked and he looked at some of the imagery that I had done with other couples that he said, "Oh, okay, I'm willing to give this a shot." Well, we did the shoot and produced just amazing photos of them. And for her, it was this way of saying, look at these photos. These photos prove that I am still a powerful sexual human being, regardless of what has been going on with my body over the last few years. So for her, that was just a tremendous confirmation. And I think that it works that way. I don't know of any. I can't think of a single couple that I photographed where that did not happen. We are told so much of the time that to be proper sexual people, to be exciting sexual people, to be hot sexual people, we need to be different from who we are. We need to be younger. We need to be thinner. We need to have larger breasts, smaller thighs, bigger penis, whatever. We are taught to believe that we are sexually inadequate in many ways, because there's a lot of money to be made off of selling products to people who feel sexually inadequate to improve their sexuality, or to sell them a big car to make up for how they feel about themselves sexually, whatever it might be.
Yes.
Well, we all need some good confirmation that, you know, just as I am, no different, in a sexual situation, I am a wonderful sexual being. And the photographs that I take, you know, I've done, you know, over 200 shoots with different people, some couples I've photographed several times. It shows over and over again, oh, look at me. Even though, whatever, you know, I'm old, I'm fat, I'm ugly, I've got warts, I've got scars, I've got, you know, God knows what. With all of that, these photos show that I am a wonderful sexual person. So for everybody, that's really an important experience.
Amen. Wow. it's quite wonderful what you do. I mean, it's therapeutic too, and the way you end this chapter in your book, I mean, it really resonated for me. Real sex in front of a camera, that chapter. You say, I feel fortunate to have stumbled into this work that is fun, exciting, creative, and performs what I see as a useful function in the world. And it really is, because you can get people to see themselves, their real selves, their sexuality is at their core, and they're having a good time, and you write about this too, and you encourage them to just have a good time and really be there. So many of the couples that I work with, I have trouble being really present, particularly the women, and some of the men too, to get out of their heads and into their bodies and to be really present and to have fun. You know, I have to remind so many people that sex is play.
Yeah, really.
It's grown-up play, and having orgasms and multiple orgasms and all of that. And especially as an older person, I just can't imagine anything more fun or a better way to feel fully alive. And I bet you hear that from some of your couples who are older, to feel really alive.
Yeah, you know, I photographed, I think the oldest person I photographed is maybe 75, but I photographed quite a number of couples, say over 50.
Yeah.
I've the youngest person I photographed, I think, is 19, something like that.
Yeah.
I photographed people with a whole series of people with disabilities, you know, fat people, thin people, people of all sexual persuasions, sexual orientations,
yeah.
Ethnic backgrounds. The point that I want, you know, to make over and over again is that we all can be wonderful sexual people. Now, you know, I people who choose to be photographed have to feel a certain level of confidence in themselves, or they
yeah.
wouldn't do that. And no matter how confident people are, you know, there's lots of people who say, oh, I would never do that in a million years, although sometimes people change their mind. I mean, it's curious. People say to me when I've had a number of shows and so on, and so people will see my photographs at an art show and come up and say, so how do you find couples to photograph?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, I started with friends, which is true. And the friends that I had, my network of friends, were people I was writing about human sexuality, and a lot of the people I knew were artists and people who focused on sexuality. So it was a likely group of people. I started with friends, and then it was friends of friends and friends of friends of friends. And then as the word got out and I started having shows, now I'm photographing people, you know, I've never met before. And I say to people, so people come up to me at a show and they say, how do you find your couples? And I say, well, sometimes it's just people like like you. I said, you know, anybody who wants to be photographed is fine with me. And then almost always, so then the people laugh like, oh, I would never do that. And I say, yeah, I know that's the way a lot of people start. They laugh and they say, I would never do that. But think about it, because maybe you would like to have this experience. And I say, you know, I try to make it easy for people. You don't have to say, okay, I'm in. All you have to do is say, I'm curious enough to sit down with you and have a cup of coffee and talk about the possibility of doing a photo shoot. And, you know, and then people often say, okay, you know, let's set up a time to do that. So we do that, and then we meet, and then, you know, pretty soon they go home, they think it over. Although usually by the time we have coffee, they look at each other and they say, come on, let's give it a shot. And they do. But people, you know, so what I'm saying is that a lot of people who at first blush might say, oh, I would never do that, change their minds. My favorite story is that it was a show in San Francisco, and I was having, you know, pretty much this exact conversation with a couple. And they were saying, oh, we would love to be photographed to you, but we're from Israel and we're leaving in the morning. So, you know, there's no, I don't know when we would do that. And I kind of laughed and said, well, the show's over at 10 o'clock. What are you doing tonight? And they laughed, ha, 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 but they took my card. And so then a couple hours went by, and I know it's the show, I think, closed at 10. It's like 8:30, 9 o'clock. I get a ring on my cell phone. And they say, well, we've been talking, and were you serious about doing a photo shoot tonight? Because we're thinking we might be interested. I said, sure. So the show closed at 10. I met them at 11. We had a place near my house. We had drinks. They were staying in a motel, actually, about two blocks from where I live. And we talked about it. And, you know, we went back from there to their motel at midnight, and we shot photos till about 3 in the morning. And
is that right?
It was wonderful.
And then later, they're back in Israel, and they're getting to look at the photographs of themselves being sexual. And were they thrilled with the end result?
Yes, they were. You know, and I mean, it's shifting a little bit now. But over the years, many of my hundreds, really, of my photographs were used in a magazine in Norway called Cupido, which is a wonderfully intelligent sex-oriented magazine. They like my photography a lot, and generally when I work with couples, I ask them if they're willing to have to be published, you know, this not in a porn magazine, but in an intelligent erotic magazine, and mostly couples choose to go that route. I work with people in two ways. Either they don't want to be published, in which case they pay me to do the shoot. Or if they are willing to be photographed, then they don't pay me, and I get to pay for the cost of the shoot and, you know, hopefully a little bit more than that by selling photos to Cupido. So this couple got not only to see the pictures themselves, but got to see themselves in a Norwegian erotic magazine, which I think they enjoyed a lot.
So in 1992, my research about the Japanese hosts, who are kind of the guy geishas, was published, and along with a picture of me. I did not have sex with any of these guys. This was my research about them. But a photo was published in Cupido. I always pronounce it wrong. I think I call it Cupido.
Well, Cupido. They say Cupido, actually, in Norway.
Oh.
So you can say it any way you want.
Anyway, so I met the editor. Remind me of his name.
Terje Gammelsrud.
That's the one. And so I met him in 1991 at a World Congress for Sexology in Amsterdam. And I told him that I had heard about these guy geisha types, and that they're in clubs, and that they cater to wealthy women who are often neglected by their husbands or by men, or they're professional women who just don't have time for relationships. And so these men will start out in the club and dance with the women, and they drink and eat together. And then sometimes these relationships evolve into sexual relationships that can go anywhere from 6 months to 3 years, and he becomes sort of a kept man. Anyway, they were very interested in this, and so I wrote the story up, and it was published in their magazine, and I still have it, of course. But I got a lot of the magazines free for a little while, and beautiful photographs. Again, fine art, sexual photography. All ages, all sexual genders and combinations, and there's so much more openness in the Scandinavian countries. And this is. Do you think that magazine had? I know we're going a little bit but not really, because Cupido had a big influence in your life. But do you think that this magazine influenced Scandinavian sexuality in any way?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think that, Scandinavia is a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. There, people think about Sweden and Denmark. Norway actually is a good deal more conservative. But Cupido is unique, I think. It's been going for 30 years now. They had on their 25th anniversary, they had a big show in Oslo, and they invited me to come over there actually, which was nice. And the show was sponsored by various societies of professional photographers. So there was a society of journalistic photographers and art photographers and so on, and all those groups together sponsored the show. And one of the women who was there, she's a journalist in Oslo, came up to me and said, "This show has changed the erotic history of Norway," she said.
Really?
So from her point of view, I really agree, Cupido is very well known in Norway. Everybody knows it. You know, every magazine store that you go into sells it. It's not like it's a porn magazine. And
yes.
For 25 years, well, 30 years now, they've carried on speaking intelligently about sexuality, including imagery, even, you know, graphic imagery or sexual imagery, the kind that I do. I've worked with them as their photo rep in the U.S. for 20 years because
20 years.
They wanted to meet other photographers that were doing work that they would want to publish. And I mean, the magazine has kind of gotten more conservative in the last few years than it was before, but I think it has made a tremendous effect. And I think of my own photography. There are a number of photographers who I represented to Cupido who had dozens or hundreds of photos published in the magazine over the years, and I say to them, I say, you know, your imagery has affected millions. Well, Norway's only a couple million people, but over the years has affected everybody in Norway, a huge number of people in Norway, to a significant degree. It's not just that somebody saw a nude photograph one time. The whole concept of sexuality that we are trying to portray in our photography gets put out into the popular culture. Now, in the U.S., I think there is no magazine that's so influential in a positive direction. But when there is a vehicle like Cupido, it can affect tremendous numbers of people, you know, month in, month out, year in, year out. And so people grow up with an expanded sense of sexuality than they would if this magazine didn't exist.
And it impacted clearly your career hugely. And how nice that you got to go to Oslo and be in the midst and be honored. You know, some of those issues that they sent me in the mail in the early 90s, I remember seeing some of your work in them, because I've known you since, maybe 87, right in there.
Right.
So I would say, oh, there's my friend, David Steinberg. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a good feeling. That's how I got into doing the photography in the first place. I was originally their photo rep. I was not a photographer of this sort myself, but I became curious about this whole process, and then the photography kind of has taken over my life. So, listen, let me just mention so I don't forget. I'm always looking for new people to photograph. People who might be listening, if they wanted to, as I say, even consider the idea of being photographed, should contact me through my website. My website is davidsteinberg.us, which includes 20 or 30 portfolios of couples that I have photographed, as well as all the writing about sexuality that I've done over the years. So it's, again, davidsteinberg.us, and david@davidsteinberg.us is my email address, and people can contact me and if they're interested in talking about any aspect of all of this.
And I will write that up in my review, and I was I'm glad you mentioned that, because I intended to mention your website, which is very good. So it's very thorough and lots of information. And so people can contact you and say, so do you go to people then? You would go to, like, I'm sure you'd go to New York City, which is where Progressive Radio Network is anchored.
I travel some. I live in San Francisco. I'm based in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people come to me from fly in. There was a couple that flew in from where are they from? Arizona, I think.
Uh-huh.
Specifically to be photographed. They flew in. I photographed them in their hotel room by the San Francisco airport, and they flew home the next day. I mean, they really just flew in.
Yes, to be photographed.
So I've done that, or, if it coincides with my travel, or if people want to pay the costs involved, we can always work something out. But, as I say, I photograph people of all different ages and sexualities, so I'm open to whoever might want to be photographed.
Good, and I'll put that all in the write-up. So... you also had contact just after you made your beginnings as a fine art sexual photographer with Barbara Nitke. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes, that's right.
And Brian, at my request, got me her book, American Ecstasy.
Yeah, beautiful book.
It's a beautiful book. I'm just opening it here, just randomly. And, it's really beautiful. And she encouraged you in some pretty serious ways to continue this, that she thought you had a lot of talent. Can you give us some backstory about Barbara Nitke and maybe even a little bit about, because she's one of the fine art photographers that you admire, although she... Well, yes, tell us your experience of her.
Yeah, well, I've been friends with... Well, I published Barbara in some of the books that I've done of fine art sexual photography, Photo Sex, which is the book that I put together of different photographers doing this work, and she's brilliant. She specializes in doing BDSM photography, and it's really stunning photography.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was just kind of experimenting, really on a lark, to see what it would be like to photograph a couple, and had talked to one couple that I was friends with into being my guinea pigs, and we'd gotten some interesting photos, and that had led to a couple more photo shoots. So I'd shot maybe half a dozen couples at that point, and Cupido was a big encourager of me. They loved my photos. They put me on the cover. They said, David, you have to do more of this. They paid me, you know, so that I could afford to do that. And then I went to New York and I, you know, asked Barbara if she would take a look at some of the work that I had done, and she said sure. So we had lunch, and she really loved my photography, and she said, oh, you know, you really have to consider doing it. At that time, I was basically writing about sexuality and mm-hmm. doing a little bit of photography on the side. And she said, David, you have to take this seriously. She said, how often do you find something that you really enjoy doing that's creative, that mm-hmm. makes a positive difference in the world, that you're good at, and that you can actually make some money doing? She said, don't think of this as a thing, you know, don't let this go by. Take this seriously. And so, you know, coming from her, that just meant a lot to me, because Barbara is so, I admire, I just like her as a person, and I admire her work so much. And on that trip to New York, there were actually a couple other people with experience in art photography who I showed my prints to, and were also very encouraging. So I came home and I said, all right, I'm gonna see where to go with this. And you know, as I said, one thing kind of led to another, and now it's almost 20 years later, and mm-hmm. you know, I've had shows all over. I've gotten some awards,
including right here, Seattle Erotic Art Festival, where we've seen you several years. We missed you this last time, but you've won Master of, what is the award? What is the title?
Well,
you've won it a few times.
At one point, they wanted to honor who they were calling Masters of Erotic Art. So the first year, they picked out five people to give this award to, and I was one of them. It was great, and I got an award from people in London, Tuppy Owens, who does brilliant mm-hmm. Work in England, has a foundation, and they named me Erotic Photographer of the Year. I forget which year, maybe 6 or 8 years ago.
Yes.
And I love the Seattle Erotic Art Festival. I think it's the best showplace for erotic art in the U.S. certainly, and I've had my photos there pretty much every year for the last 10 years, and then shows in San Francisco, and I was in the show in Oslo, and so, you know, the people have found what I'm doing, and you know, that's not necessarily everybody's cup of tea, but people who are interested in the emotional aspect of sexuality, or the honest portrayals of sexuality, artistic portrayals of sexuality, appreciate what I'm doing. The comment that you made early on when you were opening up the show about, look, sex is happening and we get to watch it.
Right, right.
That came from, there's a brilliant photography critic, Alan Coleman, A.D. Coleman, who wrote the introduction to Photosex. And at one point I asked him, you know, what do you consider make something a worthwhile sexual photograph, fine art sexual photograph? And he said the photographer has to have a point of view about sexuality, and the photograph has to say what the photographer's point of view is, and it has to be something more than, oh, look, sex is happening and we get to watch. And I just thought that was really brilliant. You know, and every photographer has their own point of view, right? Whatever intrigues that photographer about sexuality, that's what that person will focus on. Or what interests me is intimacy and emotion, and that's what I'm going for in my photographs. If what interests you is, I don't know, physical beauty of models, then that's what you'll photograph when it's your turn, you know. So everybody who's being the artist or the photographer gets to be who they are, and then they put their work out there, and people who resonate with it appreciate it. And sometimes it's a lot of people, and sometimes it's not so many people. That's just the way it goes.
Well, right here in your book, This Thing We Call Sex, you say, I was less interested in the anatomy of what was happening, who was doing what to whom, who was putting what where, than I was in the emotional connection going on inches in front of my watchful eyes. Have you taken away any personal lessons from all your work with photographing couples about emotional intimacy? Has it resonated for you? Has it changed anything for you personally?
Well, I'll say that, you know, it's really shown me the variety of the ways that people celebrate being together, you know, when they're being sexual. I have to say, I've been fortunate. I think out of all the couples that I've photographed, there were maybe two, I'm trying to think, I can think of two, maybe there's another one that I'm not thinking of, where I was photographing these people and I was saying, there's nothing going on here that is interesting, or even it's kind of disturbing to me what's going on. Not that they were doing something radical sexually, but that they seemed angry with each other more than anything else. You know, I said, this is not a happy couple. But out of, you know, 100 and whatever it is, almost 200 couples that I photographed, that's maybe two or three. I've been fortunate that the people I photographed really were having a neat time with each other. So, I got to see how much it varied from one couple to the next. You know, for some people it was quiet. For some people it was very passionate. For some people it was explosive. For some people it was tender, or it could vary from one minute to the next. So, you know, it was really a lesson to me on how many different ways there are to express that connection in a sexual way, and just reinforce my notion that that we're all unique and we're all different.
I have seen over the years quite a number of women who believe that you have to be beautiful to have good sex. I mean, truly, they have such distorted body image issues. So I think just seeing your photographs could be useful for lots of these women.
I think our notion of who we're supposed to be is shaped to some extent by imagery that we see. So if there was more imagery, if everybody got to see more of this imagery, they would have something solid to hold on to as they were in the process of defining themselves sexually, especially when they were younger, you know, teenagers, mm-hmm. and all of that. So I really, I just think it can make a big difference. I'm working for the first, I've been talking about this for 10 years, but I'm not now actually seriously working on editing a collection of the best of the photo, you know, of the, well, tens of thousands of photographs that I've taken to be a book of couples photographs that one friend said I should call Loving Couples, which I think is a good title. My discipline for this book is that I don't want it to be very explicit and graphic, because I want it to be the kind of book that a mainstream or publishing house would consider publishing, because publishers are nervous about sexuality. And what, assuming this book happens, what it will say is the imagery can be powerful and sexual without being graphic. Not that there's anything wrong with being graphic, but that it doesn't need to be graphic. I don't even know if there will be any genitals in this book at all, because that will limit the ways it can be distributed. And I think it's kind of radical to say, let's take out of the picture what everybody is used to thinking of, what is most important visually about sexuality, and show that with all of that removed, I will show you 100 pictures, you know, each of which will knock you over in terms of the sexual power that is incorporated in this photograph, even though there's nothing very graphic here. And the power of what's going on will still be undeniable.
This is very important work you're doing, David. And so people can get your books through Amazon. Is Erotic by Nature, well, I know I
yeah,
got
all,
my
all
copy
the books, all the books
years
that I have
later,
done.
But...
Photo Sex, Erotic by Nature, This Thing We Call Sex, and others are all available. You can go to Amazon. You can go to my website. There's all the books are available directly from me. I can sign them or inscribe them if people wish. Or you can get them from Amazon. There's a author's page for me on Amazon. If you go to that, it'll show you all my books. I have other books that are not related to sexuality at all. So anybody who's interested in those books can go there. As I say, you can contact me through my website, david@davidsteinberg.us, if people have any questions about anything, books being photographed, or sexuality in general.
And I encourage our listeners, I mean, David Steinberg is a beautiful writer and a fabulous photographer, and lots of people in the field have high regard for him. I'm just looking at some of your blurbs, Christopher Ryan, and I got to know him a little bit when he was here in Seattle and lecturing about his book Sex at Dawn, How We Mate, Why We Stray, and What It Means for Modern Relationships. And he writes, Steinberg's witty, candid, and deeply intelligent essays leave no doubt that his heart is as open as his mind. The shameless sensibility of Steinberg's work is to be treasured, shared, and emulated. High praise from Christopher Ryan.
Yeah, I know. I was really touched when he wrote that.
Yeah. I mean, that's beautiful. And then my close friend who's died. I still can cry about Candida Royale, Candace. She wrote, This Thing We Call Sex is a fascinating read for people who want intelligence with their sex. Bravo, Candida Royale, right? Steinberg is unafraid to expose his personal sexual truths while challenging us to face and accept our own. That's right. I've already started my list of lucky friends who will be receiving a copy. Oh, and Candida Royale, who's also been on this program, but she was my friend for like 20 years. And when she died of ovarian cancer, I just was so bereft.
Yeah,
so
she was a beautiful person.
She really was. She really, and so intelligent and creative, and like you, David Steinberg, intelligent, creative,
well,
a very important
Diane.
Voice in the field of sexuality, human sexuality.
Well, you know, I got into the whole sexual world, aside from my personal growth as a human being,
yeah,
because I thought it was an important way to make a difference in the world. It was really politics for me. I went to college in the 60s. I was part of the civil rights, early civil rights movement in the South. I came out of college and I said, I'm going to spend my life working for social change, working to make this country a better place. And when we started thinking about how do you do that, and which are the issues, and what does it take to make real change, one of the areas that the group of people that I was thinking with, I guess you'd say, one of the primary areas that needed to change, as we saw it, before anything else could change, had to do with people's sexuality and the ways in which people were being told that you are only allowed to be sexual in a very, very narrowly defined way, and that we're going to call that normal. Everything else is not normal, and if you have any of those thoughts or any of those desires, you are a terrible person. And any culture, any society, any government that wants to control people and keep people from pursuing their real needs and roiling the waters and making trouble, the way that you keep people feeling powerless, one way that you can do that is to deprive them of the power of their sexuality. So it became clear to me that challenging the ongoing belief systems around sexuality that were making so many people unhappy and making so many people feel disempowered was an important part of making room for people psychologically to feel that they had the right and the power to demand from the small elite that monopolizes all the power, that they had the right to say, no, we want something more, we want a better life for ourselves than that. So that's how I got into sexuality, and I still think of all of it. So many of the political issues are related to sexuality, whether it's pornography or abortion or gay rights or transgender issues around gender. All of these things show how much sexuality is tied in to the political issues of the day.
So, David Steinberg, I would really like to do a part two in 2017 with you soon. Are you willing? And we can expand on what you just spoke about.
Sure.
I think it's so important. And we're coming to the top of the hour. So there is the music. Thank you, David Steinberg. What
an
enlightening.
All right. Good to talk with you, Diana.
Thank you so much. And we'll do this again very soon. I'll be in touch with you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amare.